Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. So your dog is anxious, worried, nervous. Maybe has thunderstorm anxiety, maybe separation anxiety, maybe is anxious around strangers when they come into the house. And so many of us blame ourselves. And I said so many of us. I didn't mean to say it quite that way, but I guess that's about right. I would be in that camp. I get it. I understand because we care that much about our dogs. But it turns out it's usually not our fault. I've been talking about that for years, and now there's a study that demonstrates, in fact, it's usually not our fault. And whose fault is it then? I'll talk about that. Also, I talk about very important things when it comes to our companion animals. Well, this may be the most important thing ever. And it's a question I get asked all the time. You know, dogs oftentimes turn around not once, not twice, but three times before they do their business. And it turns out they point oftentimes, according to a study, in a similar direction. What? Is that really true? I'll talk about that also. But first on the line is a old friend of mine, Andrea Metcalf, who's a fitness guru in Chicago and really around the country, is known for getting us into shape. But it turns out getting our dogs into shape as well. Fitness guru, Andrea, is that about the right way to say it?
Well, yeah, thank you. I'm so excited to share some healthy ideas. And I go around the country and I own Studios Fuse in Lincoln Park, where we do a pet fitness class every month to make sure that people are working their waistline with their canine on a program called Paws Alaties.
Would you agree that most Americans are not in very good physical condition?
Yeah, we actually have the statistics to prove that as well. It's over 65% of the population is overweight or obese at this point, and only 21% of the population is getting the minimal amount of movement that we need. And I think that's reflective in, like, the health of the world at this point. We're just not moving.
Okay, so it turns out that about half of our dogs are overweight or obese as well. And as those numbers have grown, so to speak, in people, they've grown in our companion animals as well. So if we get into shape and we're moving more, does it make sense sometimes to do this with our dogs?
Yeah, and I think that's the whole point of, you know, why leave your dog at home when you're going to the gym? Get your dog out for the walk. That'll help you as well. And maybe bring your dog to the gym. We've seen yoga classes where dogs are now admitted, and they're more of a puppy thing as a novelty. But, you know, we teach a class where we want the owner and the pet both exercising together. And what's really interesting, talking about dogs and anxiety, is when these people come in with their pets for the first time, they're really nervous. They're not sure what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dogs are really yappy. They're very anxious as well. But then as they know what they're supposed to be doing and they're doing the obstacle courses or they're being lifted, that's when the dogs start to settle down. And when we do the pet massage part, which is a great way to engage with your dog, understanding their musculature and where their tightness may be based on how they move, and the meditation with soft music, the dogs calm down. And that's when they're most ready for a huge group picture with dogs and people, which, you know, it's never easy to do.
So I've seen video of this before. So this class has a name. It's called Pawsalotties. Have I got that right?
You got it right.
All right.
You got it right. Pawsalotties.
And we'll talk about when it's offered and all of that in a moment. So what you kind of describe what happens. So but let's offer a bit more description. So you come in with your dog, and then what happens?
Well, then everyone gets their own mat for their dog, and we practice some of the obedience commands of sit and stay. And what's really exciting is that the dogs then get to take a walk around to be able to check out the entire studio.
Yeah, they want to sniff around to get the 411 on what this place is all about, so they get to do that. What kind of exercise?
And then they're all,
yeah, go ahead.
Checking each other out, too, you tend to see.
Yes, yes, yes. So we want generally social dogs here. And then what other exercise are the dogs actually getting?
So if they're a small dog, we lift them up and we do squats and pliés as the human and some rotation as we're carrying them. What's good about holding your dog is it gives them some proprioceptor exercises. For the larger dogs that aren't able to be held, your labs and such, they actually get to do a stand. So we're holding their hands and they're lifting up on their hind legs, stretching through their back, working that lower body, so to speak, the lower legs, the back legs, and they're balancing and we're working on balance and stability with them. Then we have, you know, obstacle courses where we're going around, through, under, and over things. And that gives the dogs not only some interest and some fun for their parents, especially since we have balancing surfboards that they can stand on.
What?
We've got surfboards, so the dogs can pretend to surf. What's interesting is they are really good at balance. When they get up on this large surfboard with three buoys underneath, they're able to balance and stabilize sometimes better than their owners.
Yeah, that was my question. Are the dogs better at that than people?
Some of them, yes, definitely.
Interesting. And you accept dogs of all breeds, all mixes, all sizes, but are we also focusing to some extent on dogs who can lose a few pounds, either overweight or obese dogs?
Well, you know, the one thing I was told once by a veterinarian is, if you look over the shoulders and hip area to see the waistline of a dog, that they should all have their waistline go in the middle, just like a human.
Correct.
And so if I was to take my assessment of the dogs that we've had in class, we do have some dogs that are overweight. And this is good activity for them. I have had pictures from owners who send me their dog sleeping after the class.
Sure.
They really got wore out. But that's part of the fun, is the engagement and the activity and, of course, the massage and the calmness at the end.
Well, let's talk about that massage a little bit. I mean, you know, I'm not a massage artist. I don't know that you'd have to be, though, to do what you're talking about. And the thing I like most about this whole idea, including the massage, is it enhances the human-animal bond.
Absolutely. I mean, why leave your dog at home when you can actually do something with them? And there are so many restrictions on where we can bring our pets these days. It's nice to know that there are some places that they're still welcome and that they'll actually have an enhanced experience. So it's not just your regular dog walk. Plus the socialization of having everybody in the same room of all different breeds and natures is kind of interesting as well. Because it's not like they're going out and, you know, catching the ball together, but they're all doing the same task.
Mm-hmm. So how can one learn more about it? And where are these classes held? When are they held?
So there's a couple different ways. First off, our next class is April 15th, and we do it once a month at Studios Fuse. As we build this program, we're in our 6th month now, and we're up to 11 regular dogs. We're sure that we'll offer it more. But you can also look on YouTube at Pawsilates under the Andrea Metcalf channel. We have exercises that you can learn to do at home and be able to follow along, and they're all free. So just check out those videos online. And even if you're not in downtown Chicago, Lincoln Park, and you can't make it to Studios Fuse, you can always take a look at those videos and get some ideas on how you can work your waistline with your canine.
Where is Studio Fuse at?
Studios Fuse is located at 2215 North Halsted near the DePaul Lincoln Park campus. And it's a great venue. You can stop in for coffee as well with your pet at any time. Hmm. And we always have dog treats.
Oh, I love that. And also, is it a studio for, so when you're not doing the dog stuff, is it a studio for exercise for all of us, people with two legs?
Yes. Yeah. What's really fun is we have a couple of different studios underneath the Studios Fuse roof, because it's a 10,000 square foot building. So we have Hang 5 Fitness, which of course has surf classes, bar, yoga, Pilates Reformer, and TRX HIIT classes.
What are surf classes? I mean, do you have water there? I mean, do you transport people
no
to Hawaii?
Water.
What
no
what do
water.
You do? How do you do that?
Well, these are actually the boards that were seen on Shark Tank that Mark Cuban invested in. And so it's a 6-foot surfboard with 3 buoys underneath, so it makes it unstable. And when you're learning how to surf, you have dry land drills that you need to practice before you actually go and take a board out into the big waves. And so that's what we teach people, is those skills of how to pop up, how to carve, how to lean into the board in a fun Saturday morning class at 10 a.m. You can drop in at any time.
How to hang, hang 4, hang 5? I don't know.
Hang five.
I don't know the surfing terminology. Pozzolatti's Andrea Metcalf, thank you very much for keeping us all in good shape, including our best friends with 4 legs. Thank you. So many people have anxious dogs, worried dogs, nervous dogs. What am I talking about? Oh, so you're walking down the street and your dog sees another dog and goes woof, 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 and acts really aggressive. Mostly it's because your dog feels uncomfortable or afraid of that other dog. Not always, but usually. Dogs with thunderstorm anxiety, dogs with separation anxiety. Lots of our dogs have these issues, and for a variety, I think, of different reasons. And I've been talking about this at veterinary conferences with an ethologist friend of mine, Kim Brophy, who, you know, I've got to get her on the show at some point also. I mean, we talk about this and why maybe we're seeing more of this today than, say, 30 years ago in our dogs, more anxieties that are similar, interestingly enough, sometimes to our own anxieties as well. Why is that? And so many of you blame yourselves. Oh, I didn't do this right. I didn't do that right. And sometimes, yes, dogs are not socialized appropriately. That can be the case. Or maybe aversive training methods. I'm talking about trainers that don't do positive reinforcement. A study just came out about punishment. And another one, there have been several, and how dogs actually don't learn very well that way when compared to positive reinforcement. And one study even indicated that yelling at your dog and consistently doing it over time can be harmful to your dog's longevity, believe it or not. So we now know more than we ever did. And there's a study that, in fact, just came out from a geneticist that said, you know, it's really in your dog's genes. And other studies have demonstrated that epigenetics matters. So let me explain these two different things. One is in the individual dog's genes, and another has to do with breed. Now, I talk all the time, and it's true. You know, name the breed. Doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't mean all dogs of that breed fit the mold, you know, today especially. Having said that, thousands of years of genetics really does matter. And there is going to be a difference, likely, in temperament between an average Great Dane and an average Bichon Frise. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And sometimes it's not politically correct to talk about that. So that's one difference. And the study said, yes, dogs that are of different breeds are more likely to be more anxious than dogs of other breeds. So, for example, overrepresented among dogs called aggressive because of fear and anxiety, according to the study, miniature schnauzers compared to, say, Labrador retrievers. Now, I'm not saying that all miniature schnauzers are a certain way. And also, there's another factor that goes into this. I mean, this study was done in Europe. So maybe miniature schnauzers or Labradors are different in Europe compared to America. What's interesting to me is 72% of all dogs in the study, and how many dogs were in the study? 14 breeds, over 200 dogs represented in this study. So 72% of these dogs, their owners said, showed at least some type of fear, anxiety, or stress. And there's a website I want to talk to you about as well called Fear Free Happy Homes. So this website is all about tips for minimizing fear, anxiety, and stress, and much more than that. I mean, lots of great stories on this website. It's not really what but I've started talking about it, so I'm happy to talk about it. So there's an initiative that began in veterinary medicine called Fear Free. We've talked about it on this show, where the idea is that veterinary professionals are now certified as fear-free. Entire practices, in some cases, are certified as fear-free. And that means their goal, their objective, is to make that veterinary visit tolerable and, if not, downright fun. And it can happen. It really can happen. But we know that the long-term impact of fear, anxiety, and stress is there. And we know this impacts people. And we know it impacts now. We know it impacts dogs as well. The website fearfreehappyhomes.com has lots of great information, lots of great stories about pets. And the stories there, you know, so much on the internet, surprise, is not necessarily true that we read, right? So the great thing about this website, it's like a journal. And all of the stories on the website are read by veterinary experts, plural, before they go up and go live online. So the stories are written by experts and then vetted, if you will, by experts before the story goes live, like a journal would do. It's like a peer-reviewed journal, except it's stories for all of you. They're for pet owners. Some of the pieces are fun to read as well. That's fearfreehappyhomes.com. So let me get back to what I was saying here with this study. Epigenetics is fascinating. And that's where the individual, it's not only the breed, but it's the individual. So let me give you an example of this. So let's say that one of our heroes, one of our soldiers, comes back with post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome, which is happening a lot and has been for several years now. And at one point in time, I'm going back 20 years, that's a made-up thing. You know, it wasn't even a thing maybe 20 years ago. 10 years ago, that's a made-up thing. 20 years ago, no one even talked about it. I don't even know post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome, where that term came about. It was probably 20 years ago that term didn't even exist. So this is a relatively newly discovered phenomenon, but it's real. And the military knows it's real. You can check it out on their website. They concede this is a real thing. And experts in psychology, same thing. This is a real thing. Here's how real it is. And this is just one example of what epigenetics can do that we didn't know that I find fascinating. So let's say something traumatic happens to you in Afghanistan, and you come back, and then 5 years later, you and your significant other have a baby. And this can happen men or women because both genes are involved here. I'm not going to go through the birds and the bees, right? No, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, the man's genes and the woman's genes are combined, right? Well, it turns out that child is more likely to be more predisposed, potentially, to having a similar set of problems because it so impacted you that it actually changed your genetics. And this happens in dogs as well. So if, for example, you get a dog on the street, you know, and you adopt that dog, the dog goes to a shelter, you adopt that dog, wonderful. That's a good thing. But let's say the parents of that dog suffered something profound emotionally, an emotional event, and then had puppies. And that's one of those puppies, the dog that you adopted. So that dog you adopted may be more predisposed to be, fill in the blank, but perhaps anxious under certain circumstances just because. So what I'm saying is we now know that epigenetics is a real thing. Those genetics matter for the individual. They matter based on breed very often. And, of course, the way the dog is raised, I'm not taking anything away from that. That still matters as well. So all of these combine into that big picture of what your dog is today. And we think the same is probably true for cats as well. So you know that when you take your dog out, and I get asked this question all the time, and the dog's about to do his or her business, the dog will sniff and sniff and then turn around. How many times? you're probably thinking three times. That's the most common number. Why is that? And is this consistent with other dogs? And it turns out the answer is yes. A new study published in the journal Frontiers in Zoology with 70 dogs representing 37 breeds. So a wide variety of dogs looking at 1,800 defecations and 5,500 urinations. Here's what they found. They found that the dogs typically did, in fact, do what I just said. They circle not once, not twice, but three times. And they generally point in the north-south direction. These dogs were all taken out without a leash. They had an opportunity to do whatever they wanted to do. The study was done in the Czech Republic and in Germany. So maybe those dogs are different than American dogs. I don't know. But I do know this. For eons, dog owners have wondered why dogs do this. And do they typically point all over the world, or at least in Europe, apparently, in the same direction? And the answer is yes about direction. The answer is yes about them circling not once, not twice, but three times. Now, the question is why? Nobody has a clue. Who knows why dogs do that? It may have something to do with the Earth's magnetic field, so the researchers say. Just like birds, they circumnavigate based on the Earth's magnetic field. At least we think so. We don't think they use GPS. So how do they migrate sometimes thousands of miles and land exactly at the same place a year later? Who knows? Well, it has something to do with their ability to read the Earth's magnetic field. So do dogs, in a sense, have that same ability? And why do dogs have a preference to north-south? So here's a question I ask you, and let me know what happens with your dogs. Is this true with your dogs? Do your dogs do their business pointing in a north-south direction? Next time you take your dog out, pay attention, and then the time after and the time after, and then email me and let me know the direction that your dogs do their business in.